This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey gang, you've reached episode 338 of Indie Comic Book Noise, the completely independent podcast where we don't dive past the shallows of cheap ideas, gimmicks, and gags. We hang out where it's more authentically full of cheap thrills, gimmicks, and gags. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, again with...
Phil?
And Andrew.
Oh, I was supposed to be Kevin, I mean.
All right, we got indie comic books here, guys.
This was a good week for comics.
It certainly has been. And we are part of the Comic Book Noise family and the Deliberate Noise Network and all that good stuff. Come visit us on our independent Comic Book Noise Facebook page, or you can Twitter us, that kind of thing. And you can listen to us over on our other show where we actually know what we're talking about, Marvel Noise.
Marvel Noise, the all-ages comic book podcast, where this podcast is not for the easily offended.
Correct.
You get all artsy.
Or off-put.
Possibly.
Speaking of off-putting and artsy, have you read the new one from Oni Press?
I expect it to be more offended.
What if it's just good? And it's not, going for just trying to offend you. So then it's not achieving that.
You know, well, the original cover, since I don't know if you get both covers, but anyhow, I like the second cover better. But the original cover set it up as a comic I would not want to read. I'm like, oh yeah, can skip this easily.
We're talking about Rick Spears and James Callahan and Luigi Anderson's The Auteur. From Oni Press, the first issue came out, and I suppose you're speaking of the eyeball popping out of the eye as the director is kind of framing it cover, and the little eyeball's got a little smile on his face.
Yeah, that's usually a hint that I don't want to pick that comic up, but then I see the second cover, and why is this one way more awesome, where there's just ideas exploding all of his head, and there's like a naked Stan Lee, and I'm like, well, that's way more intriguing to me than the initial one. I don't know why.
I hate you, Kevin.
I find that interesting.
And that cover is by Eric Powell.
The eyeball one is definitely my cover of the year so far.
Really?
I love it. Yeah.
Other than the colors on it, which I think the shirt and the face, the skin color, match too close.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the old, like, Rick Griffin, Phil Moore East kinds of, flying eyeballs stuff. I like animated eyeballs.
Well, I like the rockets shooting out of the brain and, like, the weird... Maybe it has more of what I'm into, like, or the things that are lowbrow or, ideas that anyone would have. Like, you have a spaceship and then you have a robot and a gorilla and like all that type of stuff. So I'm like, oh yeah, there we go.
I like that in both covers. You got Dr. Love in the background though. Part of things. The basic idea here is that, the protagonist of the story, Nathan Rex, has his buddy, his doctor, his charlatan, Dr. Love. And, he is a director, producer, of movies. He's got some hits, and then he has like a He-Man flop, and he does the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings thing, or the Harry Potter move of like filming three movies all at once, and when the first one tanked, this so did his career, because he already had two others in the can.
Isn't it odd that the thing that flopped was called Cosmos? I'm like, for some forethought, or... just weird coincidence.
The Dr. Love character felt right out of Hunter S. Thompson. I don't know if it was the Hawaiian shirt or the smoking the cigarette or what. But.
Yeah, the whole thing is Hunter S. Thompson is like a new age Hunter S. Thompson kind of situation. This guy's going on his DMT trips looking for ideas. The opening sequence I love. He's sinking down, we're getting the visual of his trip, and he's just like sinking past cheap ideas going to the deeper, better ideas, and then boom, an idea hits him. And boy, does it hit him. It cleaves his skull open, and we get that all well drawn, I think.
It reminds me of, like, Ecstatics or something. If it was realistic, you'd be like, oh, that's too much. But since it's more cartoony, it's like, oh, it doesn't seem as offensive, or you can look at it longer.
Every scene, I think, has its fun quality to it, though. It's not really full of gags, but it does have, I think, really good beats to it, where you sort of see this guy being a real chump, you know, with his flopped movie and how he reacts and his posture when he's a drunk as he's walking around reminded me of, like, almost an old Gilbert Shelton kinds of posture, you know, walking around bow-legged and skinny and the way he's shaded with the horizontal lines and stuff. He drinks too much Spanish Fly, you know, and he gets a calling card left on his tent pole. I think the whole thing was a riot, both visually and stopping to actually read the words.
Definitely the running, when they're running, it's also very that extreme sort of Gilbert Shelton style. Like,
yeah.
Just a lot of their weird body posture that's kind of funny and a lot of lines. And I thought it was pretty well, like you say, there's a good amount of humor mixed in with the beats, and I like that they don't, like, suddenly it's done concurrently with him filming his latest movie, so he's got one more shot to come back, so he's doing a horror film, President's Day, so they'll just slide, so the first time they slid it in, like, I didn't realize that was them filming the movie till he yells cut, you know, because there's all these bizarre sequences. The other thing that I liked was for all the kind of crazy imagery, except for that double page splash, which is really the title page, like, it's really not excessive on giant spreads and everything. I also like the centerfold poster of the failed movie Cosmos, yeah, which is totally the Star Wars poster.
With a touch, you know, of
where yeah, Luke is there and Leia's grabbing onto his leg, and there's robots, and, like, the Darth Vader-like guy is in the background.
It's funny.
But I thought the second issue picked it up a little bit and was a little bit funnier and more to my speed. So I thought that, because in the second one they move to, the book ends with him deciding he needs a actual murderer to bulk up the beef of the story. And so he gets the serial killer. He's going to go represent him and get him out of jail so he can come consult on his movie.
This can only go well. But it's President's Day is a five-issue arc. So this was the beginning.
And for the all women have pussy speech, it's worth your money.
And what an excellent contribution, Phil.
Thank you.
Well, also, like, I do love Phil thought of it. There's a strip club called the Vatican where the strippers dress like nuns.
It's well drawn by Callahan. I really like the, like, you know, you could tell he spent some time on some panels, and he chooses where to go real detailed. And when he makes a sparse background, it's usually, you know, contrasted with something really detailed in the foreground, with only just a few things dangling in the environment, so that you really focus in on them. And while sometimes that can seem a cheat, here it really works well, I think.
I'm not gonna lie, but I want to see a Cosmos comic, I think, too. I would like to see a comic, just a one shot, maybe, based on it,
with Tamara Dobson as Cleopatra 2000.
You want Tim Seeley involved too?
That'd be awesome.
I only have the regular cover, but I think what really lends itself, and it's the only place he does it, is the background is all tone. A textured, like a Zipitone type background, which I really like. And I think that adds to the sort of throwbacky feel, because I don't remember them using that at any other part in the interior of the book.
No, it's just on the cover. Definitely.
So it gave it a nice, like you say, that sort of throwback feel to it.
Pop art, for sure.
But I'm never a fan of these letters pages, though. It just doesn't do it for me.
I thought the only knock I'll have slightly is I think at times, I know it's really the colorist like using tones a lot to predominate the pages and the scenes. And I thought they maybe went a little over on some of these. Like in the beginning, it's well distinguished, but some of the later ones, it felt like they just sort of oversaturated. I'm sure that was the point.
Yeah.
But then, I would have preferred, I just lose some of the detail a little bit.
And then the colors get all crazy when he goes on his trips, you know?
Yeah, that's what but the last one, I thought there was just so much red sort of predominating it. It's sort of, as opposed to the opening ones where there's all those crazy colors. I just like all the crazy colors better than just having the mostly red with a little bit of other colors.
Oh, I just crashed my browser. Nice.
So, but yeah, I'm definitely, like I said, I'm in. I think it's interesting. The humor seems to be taking the main part of it. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. And I hope it continues that. You know, you'd hate to have it take some weird turn where it gets all trying to say something about something.
Trying to say something about something, though.
I'll definitely be on board, too, because it reminds me a lot of that Vertigo comic Army at Love. Kinda. I don't know if you guys read that.
No,
I was a big fan of that, so I'll definitely be on for something like this.
I don't know. It was alright.
It's definitely out of the ordinary, I would say. As far as there's not much, like either you like the sensibility. I remember when I went into the comic shop, the girl that sold it to me said she fell off her stool laughing.
Really? When
she read this one. So I think it either strikes a chord in you, or you'll be like, "Eh, it's kind of just silly and pointless."
I was hoping for a reaction, either I really hate this or I really love this, and I didn't get either. So,
give us something you did like.
Something I did like. I think something. Three out of four of us read Magnus Robot Fighter. Eh? Some more unoriginal ideas here on Indie Comic Book Noise.
And this is the Dynamite book, which recently got the Gold Key license. I believe we spoke briefly about Turok on a previous episode. And here's another popular title from a bygone era. And the credits on this are Fred Van Lente, the writer, Corey Smith, artist, Mauricio Wallace, colorist, Marshall Dillon, the letterer, Marshall Dillon. Wonder if he is aware of the... well, never mind. And the cover I have is Gabriel Hardman. This may not be you because I think there's something literally like 19 or different covers to this book.
No, I think there's 24.
24.
24 covers?
Yeah, Turok had, I think, like 30 or 40.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
Well, that's what Dynamite does.
But that's
and
a lot.
Some of them are only, like, their comic shop variants. Or they're only 25 printed, but you kind of wonder if there would be that many people after that cover anyway. So
I've been very happy with the coverage they have been giving us.
Well, I think that's because they're following the Valiant model of getting good artists to do the covers. Because
I love
that.
The Turok covers, and this cover I like too.
They show the covers in the back, and a lot of them are, like some of them they just don't have the branding on it. Like that's a big... thing. Some of the limited ones are the virgin art, so there's no Magnus on it. Other ones are like pencil versions. So while there are a lot of variety, they can kind of cheat by getting the, you know, using the same cover in two different applications.
And then it looks like they even have a group editor, because it says packaged and edited by Nate Crosby. And I'm like, I'm sure, like, the more and more I see about this, I'm just like, yeah, this seems very similar. I don't know. There's something about it.
Well,
I'm sure that's what gives them the feel. Like if they want to have that continuity, like it probably helps that you have the same editor doing all these books and getting everything to line up.
Yes, I would think even if you're not going for the same, even if they don't ever cross over, I think there's definitely a conscious attempt to tie these Gold Key books together in the way they feel and are presented. It only makes sense if you're if you got all these licenses, you might try and cross-sell them even without a direct crossover. But here I went to get it because, you know, I was curious about this and I like Fred Van Lente. So I wanted to see what was going on in Magnus Robot Fighter.
So, Kev, you want to get go with the character?
I thought it was Magnus Robot Humper for a while.
There we go.
Sort That's of what a, I was going to call it a Chester 3000 for the sausage set, but. but there turns out to be remarkably little robot humping going on.
Yes. And there seems to be a remarkable large amount of story being told here, too.
Yes. Although, if we can get back to my one of my floppy pet peeves, and that is when they backload all the ads, the house ads. So you're reading the comic, and then you get to the end, but you're like, no, because you can feel another, you know, 8 to 10 pages.
Well, which one do you want? Just tell us which one you want. Do you want the ads in the issue or at the back?
I want them I want them mixed throughout the issue.
Okay.
Because don't you feel like when you're reading and you reach that point, you know, your hand judges. You're like, oh, yeah, there's more to come.
No, and then I like having a little mass underneath the book to hold on to.
If you've been reading for like half an hour, you still think you have another half of the book to go or something like that? You feel like you've read enough that...
I do it by weight of feet, like how it feels in my hand.
My like hot hands will like burn through a comic book with the thin pages of comics today. It's like my fingers are like acid. They like sink into the through the pages. I need to have a few back there lined up.
It's all that American grease.
Well, this one gives you like 9 pages after the story ends, and that just seems a lot of story afterwards. And it's all, I mean, they're welcome to have it. I just prefer my house ad sprinkled throughout the book so that I don't have that. No, I want more comic. But I did enjoy it. It starts off in what appears to be a more idyllic world where robots and humans are hanging out, having a good time. But they're still teaching old-timey, and it's like this small community, and they live in peace together. And then it's done with sort of a very light kind of... The colors are sort of washed out. And then about halfway through, I'd say, suddenly that it turns into a much more nightmarish reality where the colors
he's pulled out of the matrix
to the regular looking palette, and then he finds himself in a new world that's much more not only technologically advanced, but the big city. The country mouse comes to the city, and then it turns out that when he's trying to find out what's going on, the robots, you know, realize he's not registered. And then he has to live up to his name. The robot fighter name, not the robot humper name.
Do you guys know how similar this is to his older origin?
Not really, because I've tried to find some of the Valiant ones, and, you know, not the easiest to come by. And I've only read one of the, Gold Key stuff from back in the day. So
this is my first exposure to the character. How about yourself, Phil? Are you a...
Well, I would love the Predator crossover he had in the maybe 90s or something, but I didn't have too much exposure after that.
You know, I was fine with the whole thing that seemed like what was going on, and then we got exposed to what was actually going on. Like, the first part, I'm like, if that was the story, I was totally fine with that. Like, either or.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't... The sort of washed-out colors were
that was
a little
nice.
Weird. I thought, like, I liked it when they went to the regular world and it's more vibrant. But I thought the art, Mr. Smith, actually, I guess Corey could be man or woman. So sorry about that, Corey Smith. I thought there was a bit of a Lemurian vibe to it.
One thing I really liked was how this Statue of Liberty was coming out of the ground, because it makes you think what's underneath the city. Like, I guess maybe the earth underneath is all kind of probably radioactive or destroyed, or who knows.
Are, Are you saying it's like Futurama where the city was destroyed and they built on top of it and the city was destroyed again, UFOs well, came and then they built again?
The sidewalk is at her head level, so there's definitely a head underneath it.
Well, that's a popular... What do they say? Rome was built on like 16 earlier versions or something of it. But isn't the only thing I thought that...
Well, isn't the whole thing where it was like the whole North American continent, like, wasn't there some whole thing? It was, no, it was Japan that was the whole, I thought, oh. What, was Magnus supposed to have a whole island, like the whole continent was in the air, and it was like one whole city or something?
I don't know.
Because I know, like from Valiant, Rai was sort of like Japan was one whole thing, but I thought North America was sort of like, they called it North, was it North AM? Or something like that? Or maybe, I don't know.
Can
I
you just say a
it's
sentence,
lost, it's lost my brain. It's left my brain.
I feel like well, we should have done a little research.
I think we've all seen the sort of futuristic cities, and you can imagine. What I thought would appeal to Kevin would be, to my limited understanding, I thought the action sequences reminded me of manga a little bit. They have lots of lines, and it's very fluid, as opposed to, you know, a series of static poses. Here, there's a lot of, like I said, the force lines are being shown, and perspective kind of distorted a little bit.
Oh, it's North AM. I was right. It says a continent-spanning megacity that is damaged in a radiation accident. That's the original premise type of thing.
But
anyhow,
I don't
it's good
that.
Cartooning that works for me, not necessarily that there's a lot of lines and everything.
But I mean, would you? Does it give you that feel, or am I off base here?
I don't think so. Do you? I don't know. It's just funny that you would think that, though. Like,
no, I just the limited ones I've read, they like lots of lines in their action sequences and sort of the distorted perspective when they're fighting.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't know. I just didn't pick up on that. It just seemed like North American. Well, is that a more American comic style? I don't know if there's a Canadian comic style. Is there? Maybe it is North American comics.
Western.
I would say Cerebus style is that Canadian, or we can go Scott Pilgrim. Is that Canadian style?
Richard Comley.
I thought you would. Call Scott Pilgrim like a Japanese style.
Thought he was Canadian.
Yeah, but that style is way closer to that digest format and everything.
Giving up your countrymen
for a sixpence.
And the book ends with a bit of a twist, which in a rare stint will leave unspoken. But as Kevin said, it felt like there was a lot going on. Like they set up the world. They actually set up two worlds in a way. And the only thing that felt maybe a little heavy-handed, but I think it's acceptable, was the Frederick Douglass, how he finds the copy of the book. He's teaching it in the one world, and then he sees the copy of it in the other world.
Plus,
I perhaps could have done without that, but...
It's kind of good he wears pants now, too, because the old one, he just ran around in his underwear.
Well, it wasn't his underwear. It was a skirt. It was like Doctor Doom.
Well, that's right. It was a skirt.
So what
Not many
think?
People can rock the skirt.
Are you on board? Or?
Yes. He's always intrigued me, even though I've only read that little bit. So I think I'd like to try out the series longer.
Yeah, I was more enthused with this than the Turok that I picked up at... the Toronto Comic Con. Like, Turok was a little confusing, and it was all right, but I was
confusing?
Like... Yeah! I'm like, is it flashing back and forth, or what is going on? I don't know. Maybe I was tired when I read it. I don't know. I found it a little confusing. And this was more meaty and more interesting, I found, than the
I also have a feeling that now that we've kind of set the world up, we're going to get a little bit more humor, too. You know what I mean?
I didn't get that. Humor, really?
I don't think it's going to ever be that humorous of a book, though.
No, but I think it's going to be a fun tone that I saw hints of, but I just think there wasn't a lot of, you know, the way the humans and the robots interacted in the dream world or in the previous world or in the virtual world, whatever world that is. there was a little bit of banter and play going back and forth. And I think we're going to get some more of that in future issues. I just think that because they're kind of actually building two worlds in this, there wasn't a lot of comic book real estate to play around. They had to be very efficient.
What else we got?
All right, I got one for you.
Oh, yeah, I guess Steve has a That was silly of me.
I just read the 51-page OGN from Fantagraphics that was I found on Comixology, actually, which was a nice way to see this work presented because the color work is really fantastic. Almost looks like the vibrance of mixing like colored pencils and blending them, but not as scratchy. Again, backlit digitally looks really beautiful here. What I'm talking about is Violenzia from Fantagraphics. And like I said, this one's 51 pages, and it's from a guy, writer-artist named Richard Sala. And this graphic novel is a great way to be introduced to his work, which it was for me. And it's the story of like a kick-ass chick who comes upon a ritual being performed, a sacrificial ritual by a cult, and she wipes everybody out and then kind of goes after, you know, the next step up in the ladder and takes things to this hillbilly family up in the mountains. You know, they're shooting shotguns at her and the body count is ridiculous. And the blood from these very warm colored bodies is really impressive, and it's very simple drawn stuff. The pacing is very you'd almost say flat in some ways, but it's actually dynamic when you step into the world and you're going through. There's a lot of gags that he uses with a lot of time between panels that make up a gag, like somebody being handed a stick of gum and in the next panel they're already blown a bubble, that kind of thing, that just kind of suggests how time is moving throughout the book. And this guy's work was really beautiful to look at. His girls are really pretty, too. And the story was engaging, but it didn't go too deep. You didn't really have to know what it was all about. It was just enough to be the breath of fresh air of, like, moving through this kinetic story and getting where you have to go. Violenzia from Fantagraphics. So who's this Richard Sala guy? I'm thinking, I'm looking at also through Comixology, and I saw another book of his from this year, from this past year, 2013, which was called The Hidden. And this was 136 pages full color, and it's an apocalyptic end of the world. A guy might know the reason why, but he can't remember, and it's sort of zombie-ish, but there's something more going on. And again, big body count, a lot of horror-type themes and blood and guts, slight nudity, but nothing too overly graphic in that sense. Plenty of entrails and beheadings and things. But this guy's stuff is really cool, so I went back and looked a little further, and it turns out The Hidden and Violenzia are his only full-color works, the most recent stuff. Before that, he had a 130-page graphic novel called Delphine, which was just partial-colored. And it was a take on Snow White, but taken from Prince Charming's point of view, and supposedly is pretty intense. I haven't gotten it, but I've got it on my wish list, and I really would like to check it out. And before that, where this guy came from was from 98 to 2005. He published 13 issues of a comic that was published thrice a year from Fantagraphics called Evil Eye. And the second half of each of these issues was a heroine called Peculia. And she's got a couple of collected stories of hers in collected form, both on sale through Fantagraphics and through Comixology also. So there's a bunch of stuff of this guy that I'm slowly checking out because I really dig the way he is laying things out. Everything's really pretty, and I'm definitely going to have to post some images, both for you guys to drool over and to check out on the Facebook page.
Yes, it's always good to have images to go with this guy. So you think he's abandoned the black and white stuff, or how would you compare the...
I sure hope so. I mean, all his stuff is horror-oriented, And it seems like none of it's related to each other really either. So if he just wants to go, you know, a couple of these a year and put out some sort of little story, I'll be there to check it out every time.
Sounds like my type of writer.
Yeah, I think you would really, really enjoy it. And actually, I think all you guys would get a kick out of it. Violenzia. I recommend you check that one out. That's the most recent one, and just 51 pages. I think it's like $4, $5, maybe $6, something like that, on Comixology.
The Hidden sounds familiar to me. I feel like I've read that one.
Yeah, it was $4.99. I'm looking at it right now.
Once you bought it, you can't see how what it cost again, so that was my guess.
I know, that's always so weird. A couple times I went, wait a second, how much is that?
But check out the artwork examples and get an idea of what I mean about those, like the warm flesh that he draws, but it's very simple outlines, and really cool. Reminded me a lot of a color version of that Alec Longstreth stuff that I talked about last time, the Basewood, which I got my Kickstarter big oversized hardcover, and he drew the old man Archer guy in there, and it's like a 3/4 page drawing. It's pretty cool. Hmm. Yeah, all for me.
Kickstarter is always good. I backed a fresh one today, as a matter of fact. I mean, I've definitely slowed down, but I still dip my toes in that water every once in a while.
Oh, you're the Kickstarter king.
Yep.
Oh, I've slowed way down after a couple of bad turns.
I saw some more people today blaming Kickstarter for something they didn't have control over. I'm like, yes, they should tell companies they're not allowed to buy other companies if they've been on Kickstarter. I'm like, really? I don't think Kickstarter control the world here.
Hey, Kickstarter got me a Veronica Mars movie.
Exactly.
I'm happy with them.
Oh, did you go to the? Do you donate enough to go to the big premiere party, Phil?
I imagine that was in L.A., so no.
We got the digital download, though, on the day of the movie release. That's pretty cool.
And it was awesome. It
was hard to get to your TV, apparently, like if you wanted to push the content. Apparently, that didn't go smoothly.
I heard there was bugs. But then they were really cool, and they gave you an email and said that they would allow you to switch to any service you want. If you want it through iTunes, you want it through Flixster, you want it through whatever, they would switch it for you. So that's cool.
Yeah, I did not, like 99% of what I backed are comic stuff, so I've backed very little non-comic book stuff, and that was not one of them.
Yeah, I'm waiting on the Guns of Shadow Valley, and then Lady Saber, and
that'd be good too.
Yeah, so those are gonna be cool ones showing up this year.
Well, I'm off to Emerald City coming up, so it's my first time in Seattle, and so obviously first time in Emerald City. So I hope to have a full report of my adventures. Sadly, I can't spend as enough time in the city. Given my schedule, I don't get much time off. So we're going to be doing it kind of military precision, hitting the city and hitting the con and getting in and out before they can track us. But I finally dusted off the well-acclaimed first trade of Five Ghosts from Image. And I know Kevin's read this. I don't know if either of you two have.
Nope.
But come on. The concept and the preview pages and everything, I'm like, this seems right in my wheelhouse.
This also made, I think, quite a few top lists of 2013. It's a little old, but it's Frank Barbier and Chris Mooneyham with colors Lauren Affy S.M. Vidari. S.M. Vidaria. Well, anyways.
You know, they don't tolerate that up at Emerald Con, so you better get your act together.
As Kevin said, the pages are really nice to look at. Oh.
It's insane. Would you not want to have a page of that?
It reminds me of when I was a kid, like old Batman. Like kind of the...
How old?
The sort of end of Neil Adams and maybe the beginning of
Jim Aparo.
Jim Aparo and all that. Kind of like a really dark, there's like some mystical elements, there's some detective elements, and just how it looks and feels.
It seems like 70s maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this would not be like I said, kind of a Neil Adams-y, Jim Aparo-y vibe to it. But the colors are sort of much more, I hate to keep using the word muted, but they are that way as opposed to some of the colors then. But that's what really attracted me to it. The gimmick is that there's a master thief, and he has sort of five spirits that he can call upon their abilities. And this creates some problems for him, as you might guess. But it also gives him these abilities, so he's got to get to the bottom of this mystery with his sister. But it's really just kind of the old-timey, sort of there's a bit of Indiana Jones vibe I'd throw in here.
Yeah, it's very pulpy.
Especially when you have the sidekick, his large glasses-wearing sidekick, who's there to sort of fill in plot holes and get us up to speed. But I thought it worked really great as a trade. I don't know if in floppy form how excited I would be, but it makes a fun trade. Because there's not a ton. Like, the story's fun and it's pulpy, but it's not like some great mystery of all time where you're going to be really scratching your head over the details of it. He does undergo, basically, it starts with him stealing this gem. Then you find out that he's got to go get to the bottom of the problems he's having with his own connection to these spirits. So he goes to Africa, and that leads to an introduction of someone else who has similar abilities. And to fix his problem, he has to go through an endurance trial. And I thought that visually they worked, but from a story perspective, I didn't think the trials were particularly that interesting. I mean, we've seen that kind of storyline before, and it looked fine, but it's just like, yeah, he's got to go through the trial. I mean, the one thing I did like is they didn't drag it out, but I thought it's really top on the visuals, and the story's fine, but really it lives and dies by the art. Kevin?
Yeah, the art's why you're going to be reading it, really. I read it in the singles, and I was like, I saw the preview, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Seems to be enough story or enough whatever to it, and then as the story went on, I kind of soured on the story, but still liked the artwork. So, and then it went from a mini series to like an ongoing, and then I was like, I'm out. So yeah,
I'd check out the next trade, see where they go. I mean, the first one is a complete. It leaves on like a cliffhanger of there's some bad guys operating against our hero. But like I said, it just feels like I'm reading old Batman comics.
Like, I really like the concept. And I think the issues might have had backup stories of, like, totally unrelated stuff, which probably isn't in the trade.
No, there didn't seem to be any kind of backup type stuff. But there were interesting. I mean, a little bit of it was the covers are definitely what I assume to be the covers, anyways. They're in the collected edition. It's appropriate story breaks. Makes it feel very pulpy, kind of almost like that. And that part I liked throwing back. But yeah, there's one image. I'll see if I can get it on where he's kind of yelling and his face is all cast in like this reddish purple. And there's these circles behind his head. And it just feels very, like I said, Neil Adams-y. Jim Aparo E.
How many more? Aparo.
I know some people don't, but screw it.
How many more artists can we add with the E on the end? Like Buscema E and, you know.
I think Aparo and Adams are pretty close. Like I said, I know some people bag on them, but I like both of them. I'm Batman. I
mean, nothing sounds as good as John Burney.
you mean there's Jim Aparo haters out there?
Yeah, there's some people that think that he's just, you know, like a crappy Neil Adams clone. But I always liked him.
Yeah. I guess the earlier stuff more than the later stuff, but, you know.
You can't trust those DC people.
Oh, yeah.
Phil.
Oh, wait, I think one of those might be in our midst.
Speaking of DC people you can't trust, Phil, what have you got on tap?
I've got Vale by Greg Rucka. I guess none of you guys would have read that, probably.
No.
I'm guessing. It has a really awesome cover. by Tony Fizzulu, Bazula, whatever. And it's basically this naked girl sitting with all these rats with red eyes. That's what drew me to it. But I definitely did not feel satisfied with this first issue. Like, this feels like one of the ones where it should have been double-sized.
I agree. I actually did read this.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I picked it up. It came out. When you said the name, I thought you said Bale with a B.
Oh, no.
So that's when I was like, wait, Greg Rucka did another book, too? And then when you said the girl with the rats, I'm like, wait a second. That sounds like Vale. And then it dawned on me that that's what you said and not Bale.
Yeah, because you really don't get much for your...
No.
For the story in this one, really, I find.
I thought the art was pretty unique, though.
Yeah, love the art. I think I'm really going to dig the story as it goes along, but for the most part, it's this girl wakes up in a subway, just surrounded by rats, and the dialogue I wasn't too big on because it's just her kind of talking gibberish for the most part.
Well, we don't even know if she's human, I want to say, or what she is.
Yeah, I don't think she's human for sure. Definitely.
Because it looks like she might have been summoned because it opens up with a series of closed panels, and one of them is like a pentagram with a burning candle.
I didn't pick that up, but now that I look at it, yeah.
So I don't know, you know, if it was some kind of satanic... Because the thing is, she doesn't seem to have any cognitive awareness or very much of it at all. So a lot of what she's saying are just kind of words that rhyme. Like she's trying to figure out how to speak or how to... get access to anything.
There is one part though where a rat's following her and she goes, "You're a rat," and then she looks at him and goes, "Not a rat." So there's something up with the rat too that's supernatural.
Yes, but it's at the she does reveal that she has some extra powered abilities. But you're completely right that, man, it takes the whole book to get to that point.
Yep.
And you're like, they could have maybe had that point come a little sooner and a little less of her going rat, cat, hat, car, bar type of...
Yeah, it was just a little... they could have skipped a few pages, I think. But I think all first issues should be exercised. I think they'd get a lot more people on board for a series.
It's Greg Rucka as the writer and Tony Fizzulu, I'm going to say. Fizzula. How does that sound, guys?
Yes.
Sure.
And what I like is
yeah, sounds good.
He is the cover artist, so if you guys pull up the cover, you'll get a and does the colors too. So the whole book looks exactly like that does.
Yeah, it looks different than other books.
Right. But I mean, that's a faithful. I would say the cover looks just like it does inside. So you're really getting. Sometimes even when it's the same person. It's a different colorist or something, but that's what it looks like.
No, it's definitely eye-catching.
And then the back has a parody of those old Hostess fruit pies for a video game. But I just thought that was odd. I don't know if all of them have that, but those old Hostess fruit pie superhero ones. But the other thing I did like is that the artist doesn't have a ton of, like, it's not like it's all double page spreads or anything. In fact, I doubt there's more than, you know, 3/4 page spreads in it. It's just that it's a lot of her kind of stumbling around and finding this guy who takes pity on her and these other guys who want to do something unsavory to her because she's naked when they find her and everything. And that's the part where it just sort of wanders around. But yeah, I think you're right, Phil, in collected edition.
Yeah, like the ending was very cool and everything. But I guess it was just the start that fell flat for me.
Yeah. Well, also, you're like, okay, so now it just feels like with that, you're like, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But then where are we getting?
But now we got to wait a month.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did either of you two guys pick this up?
Nope.
I flipped through it, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll...
I definitely would recommend it, but I'd say... maybe wait till more issues come out or something so you get more.
Yeah, if I put a stopwatch beside it, Phil, how much time?
3 issues.
Oh. Steve, what have you got? You've been strangely quiet.
Oh, I have been given my plunking around trying to clean up just you know, different downloaded comics on my iPad from Comixology and stuff, and from the Marvel Unlimited thing. I've just been finding different things and then seeing those other issues, and then like this thing with Sala, I was searching around Comixology and finding some things, and they had that ridiculous sale a few weeks ago where you could get 100 comics for, what was it, $10 or $5 or something, whatever it was. So I just feel like there's all of a sudden a lot of stuff to peruse using that vehicle. So I have been. And I came back across a first issue that I had read, and there has been three others since then. And now, so now there's four issues. And that is Jamal Igel's Molly Danger from Action Labs Entertainment. And this was originally a Kickstarter, you know, print book, but has been adapted here in the, you know, touchscreen, you know, digital comic, not really guided view, but similar, using that, you know, mechanism in Comixology to tap through the layers and stuff. It's a little closer to the Thrill Bent stuff, but that really remains the top of the line in this area, I think. But this is written and drawn by Jamal Igel with inks by Juan Castro. And Molly Danger is kind of like, she's kind of like a Supergirl. What if Supergirl was on Earth? But there's no Superman or anything. It's just a girl who's an alien from another planet, and she's super powerful. Her history and her coming to Earth and losing her parents and that she's benevolent and everything is all well known by everyone on Earth, and she's really a celebrity. There's been a strike force team that's been established and developed kind of around her to not only monitor her, but also to seek out threats that she could be best directed towards and support her ability to get there and get the job done. She's been around on Earth for 30 years and hasn't aged. So she still looks like she's a you know, a young adolescent or a teenager, but you know, she's 30 years older at this point. So it's like a real mix of kind of like a Spider-Man, Nova, or Invincible kind of teen with superpowers and troubles and trying to figure out how to fit in and be burdened stuff. It's also got that superhero deconstruction bit of, you know, what if somebody like this was really thrown into our world, and she's kind of socially isolated and treated more like device or a weapon. You know, what would our reaction really be in trying to maintain and monitor and deal with somebody like this? And then it's got like the action and fun, you know, with supervillains and big mech and tech and all that stuff. And at the same time as it's all about Molly and setting up her world here, you know, it also becomes the story of this helicopter pilot who's kind of a hot dog, who gets recruited into their you know, strike force team to help support Molly, and his stepson ends up becoming Molly's kind of first friend that's developing. So there's a little bit of a triangle there going on, and it's really a fun world to see fleshed out. And like I said, I'm a little bit jaded with new concepts sometimes, but this one hit me right away, and I really like how they've broken it up to present it digitally here, again, through Comixology. It's really been a nice presentation. I missed the Kickstarter, so this is the first time I'm seeing the material presented, and I am really, really enjoying it. Good golly.
I'm looking at a photo of Bonnie Double. She's a character in the book, I guess?
I don't know if I've come across her yet.
Okay. She's pretty nasty looking.
Yeah, I have the print. What's nice is they're printing them in the sort of oversized, I think they call it the European style sort of albums, which is a very nice, pretty presentation. What's also nice is it's something you could give to younger readers.
Absolutely.
Without any I mean, it's still engaging. It's not just for, it's the true all ages where adults and younger people can read it. And Jamal Igel is such a nice artist. I mean, there's a guy with a big two pedigree, if, for those of you that are concerned. And superheroes are a particular skill set, and it's one he's mastered. So it looks just like you're going to get something off the shelf from those two.
Kevin, hit us with something else.
You know what's awesome? Bandette. I believe I brought this up before, coming in a box or Christmas or
right
something. I don't know. So it was by Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. It's one of those Monkey Brain series that's been brought over to Dark Horse. And man, it comes in an awesome package. And there is like so much content. Not only is it a hardcover, but like everything fits like in here. I was incredibly impressed. Like, even you open the book and it has this book belongs to. But since Bandette's a thief, it's like the belongs to is crossed out and it says acquired by. And then they have a foreword. And as you get to the back, like there's illustrations, and then there's all these like two or three page stories like called Urchin Tales. And you get to see like all the casts interpreted by all these different artists. And some of them are just like minor characters, like there'll be a story of the cat or whatever, like just really cool. And then you even have like just a text story with spot illustrations. And on top of that, they go into what Bandette has been stealing during the story, like all these historical things that you might not know about. Like you'll see a painting on the wall and they'll be like, yeah, that was an actual painting. And then they even show you some of the script and then how the whole thing is colored. So I was like, I was really impressed because this story is just so much fun. Like, I so want to just jump into more of this online, like, but it's such a nice package to physically have.
Nice.
It's just a lot of thieving, but a lot of adversaries, too. And you think things are going to get serious, but it never gets too serious. And even though she's, like a thief and everything, I guess she's kind of doing things, like, the right way, you know, like... Like thieving is not a good activity to be involved in, but there's just so much fun, so much style, and everything. And then the characters are like competing in thievery, but it's almost like they like the competition more than like catching each other and everything. And you get a serious moment, and she'll just be like, "Oh." Be bopping around and doing handstands and everything, so just totally like calms the whole thing down if you thought you were going down another trail here. And she's in a clock tower. Man, just tons of fun.
Sweet. Andrew, anything else?
I finished my second bind of Moore Sable, so the second one came out a lot nicer, so I'm going to move on to my third volume of Sable, and it was issue 31 I was missing, so I'm going to track that down and buying more Sable into hardcovers.
After Sable, what are you going to do?
Well,
heal.
Probably some Micronauts or Master of Kung Fu.
Anybody read Afterlife with Archie, the fourth issue?
Yes.
Oh, that was so brutal.
Still really good, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Like Mr. Lodge's whole trip and everything.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
The whole dogs, the whole We Three talk and everything. I was just like, oh.
I never thought I'd love Archie so much. Like, oh, I'm so, man. I'm so conflicted right now.
You really feel for those characters. I'm just like, wow. It's unreal. It's just unreal.
Poor Ethel. All right, guys, that's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. We will gather again sometime real soon and catch up with each other and figure out where we all stand on the latest indie books that are catching each other's eyes.
Thanks.
He's already halfway to Seattle. Thank you.
church. We'll go find lunch, and we'll haul ass down through the abbey. Is it money? Is it fame? What's in a name? Shame. Is it money? Is it fame? Or were they always this lame? Flowers at the grave.